Golf Today.
No let-up on this global golf schedule. The week after the Masters, we have two big events on the calendar. Chevron Championship, first women's major of 2024, being played in Texas for the second straight year. And the RBC Heritage Harbortown Golf Links, a fixture on the PGA Tour schedule since the late 60s when it was designed by Pete Dye and Jack Nicklaus, has an elite field as one of the circuit's signature events once again. Hey there. Welcome inside our Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters. I'm George Savarikas. Pleased to be sitting alongside Jordan Cornette. We have a two-hour edition of Golf Today until we hand you off to live golf at 7 o'clock Eastern Time with the Western Intercollegiate. We just set up those two events. A lot of star power teeing it up this week. And later in the show, we have a pretty incredible interview with Officer Rallo from the NYPD. It's a special one that you're definitely going to want to see. But a lot of news to get to as well.
Yeah, we got a lot to get to here, George, in 2 hours of work. I think we better get to work, probably.
All right, let's do it. Well, why don't we start, Jordan, with the news of the day? And we were talking about this yesterday when we saw it on Twitter, that unsubstantiated report from City AM in London had been circulating that four-time major champion Rory McIlroy was negotiating a potentially blockbuster deal to join LIV Golf. Well, our own Todd Lewis got the exclusive interview with McIlroy today at the RBC Heritage, and he joins us now from Harbortown. And Todd, you had the chance to speak with Rory. What was on his mind?
Well, he had a lot to say. The story that you talked about grabbed some traction overnight and into the morning hours here on Hilton Head Island, the site of the RBC Heritage. But Rory wanted his voice to be heard. He flew from his home in South Florida, landed on Hilton Head Island, and came on property here just before 11 a.m. And before striking his first ball on this tournament practice area, he let it be known that he is emphatically not going to LIV Golf and his future remains on the PGA Tour.
I honestly don't know how these things get started. I've never been offered a number from LIV, and I've never contemplated going to LIV. I think I've made it clear over the past 2 years that I don't think it's something for me. Doesn't mean that I judge people that have went and played over there. I think one of the things that I've realized over the past 2 years is, you know, people can make their own decisions for, you know, whatever they think is best for themselves. And, you know, who are we to judge them for that? But personally for me, you know, my future is here on the PGA Tour, and it's never been any different. Mm.
Do you have any idea of the origin of where this comes from?
No idea. I think over the last 2 years, there's been so many rumors of guys, you know, and I think, you know, you need to, you know, I think the one thing that I've realized as well is, you know, guys need to keep an open mind. And I'm sure there's been players that are still playing on the PGA Tour that have talked to, you know, the guys from LIV and had offers and whatever. I've no idea. You know, we've never, like, it's never even been a conversation for us. And, it's one of those things. It's unfortunate that we have to deal with it. And, you know, this is the state that our game's in. And I'm obviously here today and I'm playing this PGA Tour event next week, and I will play the PGA Tour for the rest of my career.
Mm. Why is it important for you to play on the PGA Tour, to end your career on the PGA Tour?
Tradition, legacy, the people that have come before us. I think that's the one, you know, the big thing that I've always talked about with staying on the PGA Tour and you know, being able to be a part of you know, tournaments like this week and watching Davis Love win this event so many times growing up, or, you know, watching some of the, you know, the traditional historic PGA Tour events where, you know, the people that have come before us that have won, and, you know, if I'm lucky enough to win those events, see those names on the trophies that I'm winning, you know, that's a big deal to me, especially with, you know, with how much tradition there is in our game. And and also the PGA Tour has been an unbelievable platform for me to not just showcase my skills, but to also try to impact the communities that we play in. And you know, if it wasn't for the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, there wouldn't be, you know, I'd still be Rory McIlroy, but I wouldn't be the person that I am today.
And after coming from the Masters, where LIV guys were playing alongside PGA Tour guys, you've been pretty vocal in that you're wanting this fracture to heal. Yeah. You're still holding that stance, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I think the game is way better with all of us, together. There's obviously some really good players on LIV that would be a great addition to the field this week, that, you know, and they're not here, and that's unfortunate. And I think just for everyone, I think for the players and their competitiveness and wanting to play against all the best players in the world, I think about, you know, the fans and wanting to see all the best players compete against each other. I think about media partners. I think about sponsors, you know, everyone involved that is a sort of like a stakeholder of the game. I think everyone would benefit from us all coming back together.
Final thing, let's talk competition. You come from the heat and the intensity of Augusta National to the island vibe here at Hilton Head Island, but still a very tricky golf course. What are your expectations from this golf course and from the competition here at this signature event?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the, you know, Augusta's over for, you know, for all of us, and like, another wonderful week for Scotty. I mean, he's just, you know, he's hands down the best player in the game right now, and you know, he proved last week why. But this is an important week for a lot of us to, you know, get ourselves up the FedEx Cup rankings, to try to put another good week on the board, and really try to get some momentum for the rest of the season. And it's a huge event. You know, these signature events are a big deal, and, you know, it's good to be a part of them. And, you know, hopefully I can put in a good performance this week and keep moving up the board.
Rory hoping to play well here at the RBC Heritage, and by putting to rest the rumors that he is leaving the PGA Tour, it is not a distraction for him. He can focus on his golf. Now, Rory did tell me he has had several conversations with Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who is the governor of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. But he said those conversations were about making the game better globally. He said that because Yasser Al-Rumayyan understands his stance in regards to the PGA Tour and being loyal to this tour and not wanting to go to LIV Golf, he says that he's never received an offer. So Yasser Al-Rumayyan and the PIF and the bodies around that organization do respect his stance, and that's why an offer has not been presented.
Todd, very interesting insight. In your role, you always have to chase down these rumors. It can be exhausting for both the journalists, the players at times. But then, once in a while, when there's smoke, a rumor hits, and we see a move like John Rahm. If you're the average golf fan trying to follow all this, how do you navigate it?
It's very confusing, and it can be bewildering. I mean, going back to the spring of 2022, when you hear the rumors of Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson leaving the PGA Tour, and ultimately that became truth to go join LIV Golf, and then the trickle effect after that. And then most recently, you mentioned John Rahm. We heard the rumors, or I heard the rumors, and several other media members, when we were at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas, that John Rahm was going to make a move from the PGA Tour to LIV Golf. And it was hard to believe if you heard all the loyalty that he proclaimed to the PGA Tour just a few months earlier. But indeed, yes, he did move. So you do kind of have to follow the rumors that you hear in regards to players possibly making a move. I would say right now, most of those rumors, as was proof today with Rory, are not true, but occasionally they are, as we saw with John Rahm.
And Todd, it feels like we're going to have to continue doing this sort of dance until PIF and the tour come to some sort of agreement. And the reason why I mention that is, coming off the heels of the Masters, post-Masters, Tiger spoke about his meeting with the governor of PIF, and he said it was positive, but he said there's still no movement towards these two sides coming together. So I ask you, so we're going to have to continue hearing from the Rorys and other notables on the tour. Is there any reason to speculate by this point these two may come to terms on some sort of an agreement?
Yeah, I spoke to actually members of both sides, the PGA Tour and LIV Golf, while at Augusta National covering the Masters last week, and I get the sense from both parties that they want to get a deal done, that the rivalistic nature between these two tours is not as intense. And they understand that there is this fracture in golf, and for the betterment of the game and for the betterment of both parties, there needs to be a coming together. The questions are, how do they do it? The technicalities of how do the LIV guys play on the PGA Tour? What's the team concept? That's the things that they're trying to work out. But from what I understand, obviously Jay Monahan has said several times that he wants to get a deal done with the Saudis. And from my sources, I understand that Yasser Al-Rumayyan and the bodies of PIF, they want to get a deal done as well. It's just a matter of getting together, in front of each other, negotiating a deal and making it happen. And once they reach a deal, there's this. It has to be approved by the Department of Justice. That could take upwards of a year or maybe more. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, this is not going to be a short timetable for this to finally coalesce and all come together. Todd, appreciate it, and great get with that conversation with Rory McIlroy earlier. And speaking of Rory, Jordan, I guess your reaction, we were seeing the news on Twitter yesterday. You were wondering, when would Rory talk? And then a day later, he speaks.
And we kind of felt like, would he even address this? Because Rory's had to do it so many times over. I mean, I would have been stunned. And I know we've said that about other guys who've left for the other side, but I would have truly been stunned because the language coming from Rory was always stronger than anybody else's. I know Todd mentioned Jon Rahm, and it was a pretty wild about face with him, pretty big 180. But Rory said if LIV was the only thing left, the only place to go play golf, I still wouldn't do it. And I think Rahm and Rory are different because Rory's a guy who means more to the tour than Rahm did. And that's not to take anything away. This guy's the face. And so if that were to happen, I would have been stunned. I think it speaks to with Rory. Now, I will say this, George, when I was listening to his great get with Todd and he was talking, I was like, okay, but where's the definitive spot? He's still leaving himself some openings. Then he finally said, I will be with the tour for the rest of my golf life. I felt like that shut the door on this. Now, I know some may still have that scarring from Rahm using pretty strong language, but I get the sense that Rory is here to stay. But it goes back to these sides need to come together so we don't have to keep dealing with this.
100%. And with the Rahm, I was less surprised overall. And we've played the soundbite so many times of Rahm saying, I pledge my fealty, et cetera. I believe that was said before June 6th of last year. So he says that, then the tour does a 180, and then Rahm does a 180. So I kind of understood from a psyche standpoint how his thinking could evolve over time, predicated on the events of last summer. For Rory, he has worn this so publicly as the face of the PGA Tour. It would have been stunning to me. The part that just sucks for golf fans is regardless when they come together, it's going to be 3-4 year process.
Yeah, which means there's going to be more of this.
It's going to be till 2027 or 2028. But I would be equally as shocked if they didn't get a deal done. Like Strategic Sports Group and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, there is too much money flowing from Saudi Arabia to U.S.-based companies currently. So to think that somehow the Strategic Sports Group, when there's already a lot of investments that are intertwined, wouldn't eventually work with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia in some way, shape, or form when it comes to professional golf is naive. Like, that's an inevitability. Now we're just trying to hash out what the timeline will be and what the new entity is going to resemble, because I do think team golf in some way, shape, or form is going to be a part of it. But how big and what is it going to be branded as? There's still a lot to be decided with that, plus any penalties that LIV guys would have if they came back. And I know the PGA Tour is strident on that. And for LIV, they're like, well, okay, well, how is that beneficial for the game when you're trying to mete out justice? And how do you determine that?
I will also sit here and I kind of chuckle as we're talking about this to lead our show. And again, great job by Todd getting the response from Rory to put away that fire, at least for now. But who wins in this moment? This is LIV being talked about again, and I think there's a part of me, the skeptic, that goes, this was baseless. This was floated from LIV's camp. This is what they wanted to stay in the stream of consciousness. Isn't that the vibe you get when these kind of things pop up? Because it seemed like when Todd was talking to Rory, Rory was dumbfounded. Rory had no idea how this has come up again, and here we are addressing it, and that's a win for one camp, not the other.
Yeah, I do agree that for LIV, they win the news cycle. And that has significantly outperformed the product that they've put out so far for golf fans. Internationally, they've had a bigger impact. Like, they're heading to LIV Golf Adelaide. That's been kind of their success. Domestically in the U.S., hasn't gained a whole lot of traction. I think part of that is what you see on TV. If you talk to the average guy on the range, they're intrigued by the concept of LIV. But then actually watching it, they're like, eh. Not that great a watch. So that's why the news cycle has been where they've generated the most momentum. But I think overall, when you take the two tours, the fan so far has been the loser.
And if you watched this past weekend at Augusta, there was not much LIV representation on that leaderboard. So this is all right now that they are chasing. But the good news is $850 million. If it was true or not, Rory's not taking the bait. So stay with us. Like we said, we got a whole lot more coming up on the show. We're turning our focus to the LPGA and the most dominant player in the women's game. Nelly Korda looking for a major title and some serious history this week in the Chevron Championship. We'll hear from world's number one next.
Golf today, cruising right along this Tuesday. How about the run Nelly Korda's been on this year? She got off to an early start in January. LPGA Drive-On Championship. All she did was finish eagle birdie to force a playoff and then take down Lydia Ko. Nelly would eventually win for the ninth time in her career on the LPGA Tour.
Nelly didn't play another LPGA Tour event until the Fur Hills Sayre Puck Championship in Palos Verdes. But the eight-week break didn't matter. Nelly again pulled through in the clutch, winning in sudden-death playoff against Ryan O'Toole. Now, the following week, she would then go on to win the Ford Championship. And at that Ford Championship, where she shot a final round 65 to grab her 11th LPGA Tour victory, with that win, Korda became the first American player to win three or more consecutive LPGA Tour starts since Nancy Lopez did it in 1978.
And Jordan, she wasn't done yet. How about her first appearance at the T-Mobile Match Play at Shadow Creek in Las Vegas? Picked up yet another win for her 12th career victory now on the LPGA Tour, fourth straight win in consecutive starts to open up this season for Nelly Korda. So we had to go deep in the history books on the LPGA Tour to think of players to win four straight starts entering a major. Remember what Annika Sörenstam did? That was from 2004, a carryover into the 2005 season. What was then called the Kraft Nabisco, now it's the Chevron Championship. All she did was go on to win by eight. Maybe a good omen for Nelly Korda as she met with the media earlier today in advance of the Chevron Championship.
Nelly, back in 1978 when Nancy Lopez won five in a row, she was on the front page of the cover of Sports Illustrated and the front page of the New York Times. We haven't had that kind of breakout coverage since then. Mm-hmm. Are you think we can get there, and are you the person to get us there?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that it just depends on the opportunities that are brought to you. You know, if you're playing good golf and you're competing well and people see how much love you have for the game or how much that, you know, how much work you put in day in and day out, I think that if everything comes with results. If you don't have results, then you're not going to get opportunities. So everything at the end of the day is about results.
Nelly, two consecutive weeks of major golf in the round, and obviously Scottie Scheffler came in with so much expectation on his shoulders and has been not quite as dominant as you, but of that ilk. I just wonder, do you draw inspiration for what he did at Augusta last week? Does that kind of help you in your quest to kind of keep this going?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I don't think anyone can ever say anything bad about Scottie. I love his morals. I love his attitude out there. I just love the way he goes about his business. He inspires so many around him, including myself. I mean, obviously, as he even said, he wants to win every tournament he tees it up in, and that's every girl that's out here competing too. And I think that you just have to go about your business. You can get lost in the articles, you can get lost in the expectations, but I think if you just stick to your true self, I feel like you can live in your own little bubble and enjoy it a lot more.
How aware of that dynamic are you, and therefore how aware are you of what you're achieving right now?
Yeah, I mean, in 2021 I went on a run, and then in 2022 and 2023 golf really humbled me. So I think that it's their sports. There's ups and downs. I mean, every athlete goes through the roller coaster, but that's what makes this sport so great. You mature, you grow so much, and you learn more about yourself. So you never take these weeks for granted. You always, you know, try to appreciate and become very grateful for them. And it makes just all the hard work so worth it. But I think I've learned so much about myself even through the losses.
Nelly, it would be natural to expend a ton of energy to have gone through these four events, these four wins. Where is your energy level at coming into this week after getting back to your own bed?
Gosh, last week I was so tired. I don't think I've ever been that tired. I woke up and I was ready to go back to bed, but I couldn't. It's almost like to the point where you're so tired, you almost can't sleep. Like, you're just overly tired. but made sure to prioritize my rest. My parents are always on top of me to, you know, not overdo it. Or I always want to practice more. I want to do more to be better. So made sure to prioritize my rest. And making sure to go to sleep early and sleeping a lot too, because that's the number one thing for recovery. But overall, this week I feel really good.
Do you remember at what point in time in your career that focus on the present really clicked into place for you?
Yeah, I would say I was actually talking before my first ever LPGA win. I was talking with Hollis Stacey on the putting green at Concession. And I was out there putting, doing a drill, and she always comes up to me whenever she sees me out there. And she was just, I was just talking to her about, like, obviously that I haven't won out on the LPGA tour. And she just said, when the time is right. So I put that in my yardage book that week that I won in Taiwan at Swinging Skirts. And I just said, when the time is right, it'll happen. And that made me very present. And that made me think of more of golf as a shot at a time, not to get too ahead of myself. And when the time is right, it'll happen, because I've put in all the work.
Can you tell us what some of those sayings are that are in your yardage book?
Well, no, they're private. There were ones that Jamie Mulligan actually had me put in there. So I actually the first week I had it was in Bradenton, the yardage book. So I look at those sayings. There's four in there, and I look at those sayings almost every hole.
Your name came up in a press conference with Fred Ridley, the Augusta chairman, last week in relation to Caitlin Clark and what she did to bring popularity to women's college basketball the last couple of years. Do you personally feel any sort of duty or burden to help the tour get more into the spotlight?
No, never any burden when it comes to this. I just hope I show people that, you know, how much I enjoy being out here week in, week out, competing against all the girls, practicing, and hopefully, you know, that drives more attention to us. Obviously, you know, with the run I've been on, maybe there are more eyes on me, but I always am very grateful for it, because I know how fast something can be taken away from you. So, you know, I hope that people see who I am, my true self, and that inspires them too.
Remember when we were talking last week leading into the Masters how short the odds were for Scottie Scheffler? You're seeing some books at about 4-1 plus 400. Nelly Korda about just as short a favorite coming into the Chevron Championship. Check this out. She is 5-1. Next closest, you got a big bunch of players at 25-1, including Lydia Ko and the defending champ Lilia Vu. The book clearly seeing Nelly as the dominant number one who can keep it going. This week, it's basically Nelly's world, and we're all living in it. Yeah. Unless you're, Scottie Scheffler, it's wild if you think Scheffler's last four starts, 3 wins, a runner-up. Nelly's last four starts, 4 wins. They've combined won 7 of their last 8 starts. So they're both dominant on their respective tours. Do you see any similarities, or do they do it in kind of a different way?
I actually see a lot of similarities between the two. Both are long-limbed, different swings, but then how they move, there's a fluidity to it. There's a stoicism meets a confidence with both of them, and there's also reluctance in terms of stardom. It's not like they want to be all in front of it, but they understand it's what comes with the talent that they possess. What's interesting to me when you watch Nelly Korda is the fact that she's won these four, which is incredible, and she's chasing a fifth, which is a major, be her second, but that she's won in clutch situations. 2 playoffs in that 4 tournament run, which speaks to the growth and the evolution of her as a player. She now knows in those moments it's her versus herself. And I think that's what you really see with true champions, and I think that's what you're watching with a star who's coming into the prime of their career because they're healthy. Their approach in terms of training has allowed them to get to this spot. She comes from a family of athletes. She's built for this moment, but she's not going to let the pressure overtake her. The question about Caitlin Clark and being the star, I loved her answer. She's just grateful to go out there and have the opportunity. That's the deflection you need to continue to be that rocket on that rise.
And you mentioned the injuries, because 2021, she has 4 wins in a major. I mean, we had the Nelly Korda hype about it as high as it could be, because we knew what we had just seen her do that year, and we were projecting what her career was going to look like. She had the blood clot early in 2022, back injuries last year. She went 22-23 with just one win. So coming into this year healthy, we were thinking, are we going to see the old Nelly Korda? No, we're seeing an even better version of Nelly Korda, who's now won four straight starts. But the next step is, okay, you're dominant.
The majors now.
Let's see you peel off a major or two and have the type of season that, looking back, then defines the rest of your career. And it seems like she's in the middle of it right now.
Well, this is unique territory. I mean, you showed the odds coming in. I mean, this is a major. She only has one, and we talked about the injuries and the up and down roller coaster of a career, which is clearly hitting its stride right now. But she's going to be the runaway favorite. We saw Scotty do it in Augusta. It's like, yeah, he's playing great golf, but look at the number. Is he really going to go out there and steamroll? And he did. It's a lot of expectation, which starts to speak to the taste of the expectation that inevitably is going to continue to come with Nelly Korda. So how she handles this at Chevron is massively interesting to me.
Well, if you just keep betting chalk, I mean, we had UConn win the men's
college
tournament.
Basketball.
South Carolina went undefeated. Then you have Scottie Scheffler, who had those short odds. So it seems like, all right, if Nelly gets it done, that's just been been the year of the dominant.
It's also it's been the year of the star. Mm-hmm. And so there's no reason not to believe that Nelly, who's looking like that star that we expected a couple of years back, is now hitting that. There's no reason not to believe it. But again, everything I hear from her, how she's carrying herself, feels like she's ready for this moment, George.
Yeah, it's a very understated approach. And no surprise here as we're going to take a look at the race to the CME Globe. Guess who's in that top spot? And it kind of led you there. Nelly Korda only double Lydia Ko. You don't see a margin that big, especially this early in the season, too often, because Nelly is putting together something special so far. Ayaka Fudaway, you see currently in number three. So the Chevron Championship marks the first women's major of the year, and it's being played in Texas for the second year in a row. The club at Carlton Woods, the host once again. Few new wrinkles we'll get to later in the show. So with more, let's welcome in Amy Rogers, who is on site all week. Amy, what do you have for us?
Hey there, George. Well, when Chevron took over the title sponsorship of this beloved major 3 years ago, they did so with the commitment that they would further elevate this major. And in doing so, they announced that they would be moving the major from Palm Springs to the Houston area, which was met with some hesitation, but players have been more than impressed with the work that Chevron has done with this championship. And then just over this last year, the club at Carlton Woods undergoing a complete renovation here for this course to meet the standards of this women's game, to give them a really great major test for this championship. And then the latest news today coming from Chevron, announcing that they will increase the purse here effective this week from $5.2 to $7.9 million, and that Chevron will extend its partnership with the LPGA through 2029. Now, the winner on Sunday will take home a check of $1.2 million. And after that announcement was made today by Chevron CEO Mike Wirth and LPGA Commissioner Molly Marcuse-Simon, I had a chance to speak with the LPGA Commissioner about how this change came about.
Chevron has dug in from the minute that they became the title partner. You know, they've said, how do we elevate the LPGA? How do we get our players to reach their peak performance? How do we pay them commensurate with their world-class talent? What do we need to do to get there? And we've been just building and evolving. So I think it's just about our partnership. We're in conversation with them every day throughout the year to figure out how we can grow this. So it was just an evolution of those conversations. And really, Chevron's commitment to making this big and meaningful to the players, but also to the fans and to our partners across the world.
It was at this event a year ago that you held sort of a summit of sorts with leaders from across the golf industry. Jay Monahan, Mike, Juan was here, Seth Waugh, and then you had a similar gathering here today. What's the purpose of these events, and how have they been able to help the LPGA?
Yeah, I think we bring people together to really be in conversation about how we move women's sports and women's golf, to the next level. And, that's the only way you can do this. I always say that golf's an individual sport, but growing the LPGA is definitely a team sport. We need all of our partners, we need all of our players, we need all of our staff to be sort of rowing in the same direction to take this to where I know we can go. We've already made huge progress. I mean, in the last, 3 years, we've grown purses from $70 million to over $123 million now, I think is the number. So, and that just requires people coming together and, as I say, sort of pressuring the systems from all angles. I think the world has seen that, you know, women's sports has tremendous value. People want to watch the best women athletes in the world. And so how do we make sure that we give them that opportunity?
They've got plenty of opportunity to watch what Nelly Korda has been doing, chasing history this week with a fifth consecutive victory. How is the LPGA capitalizing on this popularity and this opportunity, given the success that Korda's had this season?
Yeah, I mean, Nelly is amazing. She's been playing the best golf of her life and really the best golf that we've seen in a long time. And so our job is to figure out how to get more people to see what she's doing, get more people to tune in to the great success that she's having and the great talent that she has, as well as the great talent of all of our players, because we do have the very best in the world competing here. So, yeah, I think it is our responsibility to just, you know, push and push and push to get more people watching. We've got ESPN Plus here this week. We've got the Golf Channel. We've got NBC. We've got Peacock. We've got it firing on all cylinders. I think we have 60 hours of coverage, which is really important for us to be able to have the world see our great athletes.
The Chevron Championship had previously had the lowest purse of the five major championships, but now with this announced increase today, surpasses the Amundi Evian Championship in terms of prize money. And George, one other note, another announcement coming from Chevron today, each and every player in the field, regardless of how they finish this week, will receive $10,000 just to help to offset and defray some of their costs and expenses.
Definitely great news. Amy, as we're taking a look at what Amy was alluding to, the purse increase with the Chevron Championship passes the Amundi Evian Championship, KPMG Women's PGA at $10 million, U.S. Women's Open up to $12 million, and you see the AIG Women's Open at $9 million. The purse growth from 2022 to 2024 has been remarkable.
Coming up, Matt Fitzpatrick returns to Harbortown as the defending champ this week. One of the perks, a new hamburger named after him. If it's not called the Double Fitz Patty, I'll be upset. Todd Lewis catches up with the champ when we return on Golf Today. Back on Golf Today, and what a week it was in Augusta, Georgia. Scottie Scheffler became a two-time Masters champion, beating the field by four strokes for his ninth career tour win, becoming the fourth youngest player to win the Masters tournament multiple times, joining the likes of Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Seve Ballesteros. He's back in the field this week as the PGA Tour heads to Harbortown Golf Links, the RBC Heritage, the fifth signature event of the season on the PGA Tour. There is no cut.
Remember last year, the showdown between Fitzpatrick and Jordan Spieth. This went to the third playoff hole. Putts narrowly missed on the first and the second as Fitzpatrick survived a couple near blows from Spieth to go on to get the win. His second in his career on the PGA Tour. And of course, he gets that sweet jacket. And a look at today as the defending champ. The opening ceremony for Matt Fitzpatrick, the shot and the Calabogie sound. Good stuff.
All right, your super caddy, Billy Foster, has the lighthouse head cover on your driver again as you make your way around here at Harbortown. But this year, you're a returning champion. I mean, what are the emotions coming back here in a place where you and your family used to vacation?
Yeah, just excitement, really. Just looking forward to the week as a whole. It's obviously a little bit different coming back as a champion. So, got to defend that title this year. But, it's just a special place for us, and it's always an exciting week.
Is there a memory that sticks out from last year?
Just the playoff hole, yeah.
When you knocked it that close.
Yeah, that was good. Although someone reminded me of the hilarious story that did happen. We were looking for dinner after I'd done everything, and we go to... We ended up in Papa John's, the pizza place, and we're in there, me and Catherine, my fiance, and someone said, oh, yeah, the golf just finished, and I think Catherine or me said, oh, who won that? And the guy was like, oh, Fitzgerald or something. So, we got a good laugh out of that, that's for sure.
What did you used to do as a kid when you came here to Hilton Head Island on vacation?
Played a lot of golf. I only played that here a couple of times, I think, maybe once. But, just played a lot of golf. We go around the area, different golf courses, on the island, off the island, kind of, you know, go to the beach a little bit. So yeah, just a lot of fun.
Did you have a favorite spot?
We had a few. We'd always go and play, I don't know what you call it over here, but we would play mini golf. So we'd always go and do that. That was always fun in the evenings after dinner. We always had a good laugh. But yeah, it's just a special place for us. So. Mm.
You've had some interesting equipment issues this year. There's a weight that you found in your driver that was accidentally there, and you've taken it out. Can you walk us through there? What happened?
Yeah, so I mean, I was doing some testing in the start of 2023. Had weights in the grip of my irons and worked for about 2-3 weeks and then didn't work. So, but whilst they were in, we tested some stuff with the driver as well, and yeah, just completely forgot to take it out like an idiot. But that was all my fault.
And once it was out, you started playing better.
Been driving it better, okay, that's for sure. Yeah, definitely been driving it better.
All right, well, you have been playing better. Your last three starts, a fifth place finish at the Players, top 10 finish at Valero, top 25 finish at the Masters. How would you describe your game as you defend this championship this week?
I'm getting worse if you say that. that trend. It's not exactly where I want it. There's no doubt about that. There's still a few things, you know, I want to iron out. But I feel like I've been playing better and have been putting well as well, which is one of my big strengths. So, for me, it's just sort of keep working at it and keep trying to figure it out. You know, golf's the forever game of trying to figure it out. You know, no one's done it other than Scottie Scheffler yet, and Tiger.
Yeah, that's true. Finally, besides getting that cool plaid jacket, you also get to help design a hamburger, a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
This one, bacon, cheese, aioli, the Fitzy. We'll call it the Fitzy.
I don't think it'll sell very well, I'll be honest. But yeah, that was good fun. I got sent through this order sheet. The tournament wanted to create a custom burger, and did it. Obviously, tried it in my press conference today, and it was pretty good, actually.
Really? Yeah. Did you eat the whole thing?
Half. If I'd eaten the full thing, I'd have passed out in a food coma.
That's what world-class athletes do. And by the way, it's a side of chips, not fries, right?
Exactly.
Hey, good luck this week.
Thanks, Todd. Thank you.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Continuing on golf today as we take you back to the 2016 Chevron Championship. At the time, the ANA Inspiration at Mission Hills. Lydia Ko birdied the 72nd hole to win her second major championship title and become the youngest two-time major winner in LPGA history at 18 years, 11 months, and 9 days. The win at the time marked her 12th on the LPGA Tour.
Obviously added to that win total since. How about the start to this season? We were thinking it might be the Lydia Ko show. She won the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions, then lost that playoff to Nelly Korda. She was trying to win two straight. Since then, only one top 10 finish leading into the season's first major this week with the Chevron Championship. Let's get Ko breaking down her season so far to this point.
Yeah, I feel like I've been playing a lot more solid and to be able to win the first tournament of the year was just a bit of a confidence booster, and to play well the week after was also great. I think when you come back from an off season, it's hard to know whether you're actually going to play well or not. And I think those first few events are a good gauge on what you need to work on throughout the season. And luckily I was, you know, able to get a couple good results and, you know, learn what are the aspects I need to work on and what are things that's going well. So I feel like I'm progressing, and, you know, the more chances I give myself, I feel like, you know, one of those chances are going to, you know, happen at the end of the Sunday. So I'm excited to be here. And, you know, it's our second time in the Woodlands area. So, you know, I'm excited for a great week.
Lydia, we know winning first event out of the gate is always a dream start, but it's kind of challenging to maintain that momentum. How have you really maintained that pace that you set yourself up for so far this year?
I think my coach has been a big help in that perspective of never getting me too excited or, you know, too above. And even after I won the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament Champions, I think on the Sunday we were like, okay, even though I won, like, what are the things I could have done better to like maybe be more comfortable coming down the stretch, you know, if I have, let's say, a one shot lead rather than a 2-3-4 shot lead. So it was, I think he always, you know, sees a positive in things, but also we're always looking forward to progressing. And I think that's a great mindset to be. And we were both on the same page on, you know what, you know, even though I won, I think I could have done better in this, so that next time, if I'm in a similar situation, I'll be able to, you know, handle that better. So he's been a really big help to like just kind of keep me grounded and always working to get better.
What's it been like for you to watch Nelly's run of 4 wins in a row? And where does that streak kind of rank for you in terms of runs or performances since you've been on tour?
I think this is definitely one of the best, I think, stretch a player has played in my 11 years on tour. I saw that, like, was it May and then Annika were the maybe the last two that had won, like, 3-4 events in a row. And the max I've done is 2. And I was like, you know, this is pretty cool to be able to win back-to-back weeks. But for her to have done that, you know, win the second event of the year and then have, like 8 weeks off and then win the next 3. I was like, man, I shouldn't have like played. We're all playing for second place, but I was lucky enough to play alongside, you know, Nelly and in Phoenix, and she played great. She putted great. And, you know, she's obviously coming in with a lot of confidence. And even on the men's side, I think Scottie Scheffler is having a great stretch of his own as well. So it's pretty impressive. And I think sometimes people are like, oh, it must be just that much easier to win, but it's showing and saying something about the player if they're winning 4 weeks straight. And I think it's great for the women's golf. And I think with her playing well, it's inspiring and motivating the rest of us to, you know, keep doing what we're working on. And, you know, we all know that golf is a difficult game. So we're just trying to do our best, and it's a new week. So who knows what's going to happen.
Wild to think that Lydia Ko's last major was 8 years ago. That is what is now the Chevron Championship 2016. 20 LPGA Tour wins, 2 majors, closing in on that Hall of Fame bid. Round 1 coverage, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Golf Channel and Peacock. And we circle back later in the day at 6 Eastern. On the weekend, it's on NBC and Peacock as well. Later in the show, not often you define someone as a hero. We're going to meet one. That's coming up on Golf Today.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Patty Tavitanakit is making her 7th start in this week's Chevron Championship. She's made her last 5 cuts with a win in 2021, a T4 in 22, and in 21 she shot 18 under to beat Lydia Ko by 2 strokes for her first LPGA win and first major title.
And how about the improvement from Patty Tavitanakit from last year? These are her strokes gained ranked to what we're seeing this year. Last year, I only had 1 category among the top 70. This year, 4 categories, if we're looking tee to green, off the tee scoring average, and birdie or better percentage that are all among the top 10. And you can see why she's already pocketed a win this season, her 2nd on the LPGA Tour. And lucky us, as we have major champion Patty Tavitanakit joining us ahead of the season's first major. Patty, we'll get to your win just coming up, because obviously that's been one of the most special wins that we've seen so far this year. I'm curious, Tuesday, Wednesday of a major week, as you're prepping, what are the boxes that you need to check so that on Thursday you're thinking, I'm all systems go, I'm ready to roll?
Leading up to this week, I've been preparing quite a bit. If anything, I might have done too much at home. So this past weekend, I felt a little, I wouldn't say fried, but a little bit more tired than I'd like to be going into a major. So this week, watching my energy level is the number one priority. 2 is my physical stuff. Just, you know, going to the gym and making sure my body's moving right has been the priority as well. But anything, you know, I just try to keep everything the same. I'm treating this week like any other week, even though it is a very special week. But I'm just here and I'm looking forward to just have a fun week and just play golf. Like, I've been really enjoying the game. You know, just this year so far, like, I'm enjoying my process, and I have a lot of things that I'm looking forward to on the course. So I'm always have that little spark in me, which is different.
Patty, now understanding it was a different course, but in 21, having won that Chevron Championship, having won that major, how does that serve you positively going into this one? Understanding it's a different course, but having that experience of what it takes to surge through and win on Sunday?
It is a different course, but I feel like that win, was it 3 years ago? It was 3 years ago, was yeah.
It probably feels like yesterday to you.
No, it felt so long ago, honestly. But that win, I feel like I was in such a different place. I was so young. I was fearless. I didn't know anything. I just went out and played golf, really. And I kind of lived up to my potential that week without any expectations or anything. And what comes after that was a blessing, but it could also be a curse. And I learned it the hard way. And it took a lot of learning curve to get here to be able to say, like, I think I've matured from that. But to take on this week, you know, I feel like all of those learning curve, all those rounds of golf leading up to this week, it's just has prepared me to just play at a big stage at a major event. So just going out there, have a good plan and have good process plan to tackle the challenges throughout the week would be a key.
Patty, the weight of expectations can be a fickle thing, because on one hand, you know you've done it before and you're capable, but on the other hand, then you anticipate that you're always going to be in contention because you've been atop the mountain. So what specifically did you learn from how to deal with those expectations that has you in such amazing form this season?
You know, just embrace it. I learned the past 2 years that nothing worth having is going to come easy. So just embracing the fact that you're going to have to earn it to get what you want. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to face challenges. You're going to it's going to be a grind. Golf is not easy. This sport is not easy. What we do is not easy. So just having that mindset at the back of your head, just to keep pedaling, keep looking forward to the next shot, the next thing, the next hole, next tournament. I think that's a really good place to be in, week out. So yeah, that's just my plan.
So, Patty, I won't go back 3 years ago. I'll go back just a couple months ago here on this one, because I feel like this might be even more special of a win than a major, winning in your home country in that LPGA Honda Thailand championship that you won. Being in your home country, how special was that experience for you?
It was so nerve-wracking. I couldn't even tell anyone how nerve-wracking it was. It was the most nervous I've ever felt on the golf course, with all the crowds were amazing. Playing in front of my parents, that was my first LPGA win in front of my parents. And just being at home, like, it just meant so much, you know, coming off of my LET win in Saudi too. Like, I was pretty beat up with all the attention on the media stuff and just traveling, time change and everything. So I was so proud of myself that week, and it meant so much to me that I don't know if any other wins could top that. But we'll see.
I was going to say, there could be more in store, and we've been hyping up how Nelly's had four in a row. You won back-to-back weeks earlier this year. Best of luck this week,
Thank you. We'll
certainly be watching.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And here's a reminder how you can catch coverage of the Chevron Championship. See Patty Tavitanikit, Nelly Korda, defending champ Lilia Vu, some of the stars that are in the mix. Remember, round one, Thursday, early 10 a.m. Eastern time, and then we circle back later in the day at 6 Eastern. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. We'd like to shine a spotlight on Metropolitan PGA professional Vincenzo Rallo. Rallo graduated from Penn State University's PGA Golf Management program back in 2008. He served in the golf industry various roles: lead merchandiser at Seawayne Golf and Country Club in Hewlett Harbor, New York, assistant pro at a number of different spots, and as the
head golf professional at Golf Galaxy prior to switching gears and careers and becoming a member of the NYPD. He's currently using golf to bridge the gap between the police and community and offer golf to underserved areas of New York City. Last summer, Officer Rallo created PGA Bridges with the help of a Metropolitan PGA Section Foundation grant. The organization aims to grow the game of golf for underserved and minority kids. PGA Bridges looks to introduce the game to a demographic that otherwise would never be exposed to golf, which is an incredible organizational effort to help his local community. Officer Rallo's name recently made headline news for a completely different story. It was a valiant effort back in February as Officer Rallo and his fellow officers saved 12 people from a burning building in Brooklyn. We're honored now to be joined by NYPD officer and PGA of America golf professional Vincenzo Rallo. Vincenzo, first off, thank you for everything you do protecting and serving our communities. We talk golf for a living between us. I can't even fathom being front and center for what transpired back in February as we saw that story. Pretty different than the previous life you had as a golf pro.
A little bit, yeah. Just a little different.
You could take us through the events of what happened back in February.
Sure. So my partner and I were on patrol in the morning. We were asked to look after a couple of different buildings. One of them we went into, we did our normal interior patrol, which is where you go up and down the building and just, you know, make sure everything's good. After that one was done, we moved on to the next building. When my partner pulled up in front of the building, we heard, cries for help coming from somewhere. We exited our car and looked up, and we could hear the cries for help coming from the fourth floor windows where people were yelling out at us. So once they said it was on fire, we knew it was, you know, time to take action. And we ran right into the building and up to the fourth floor where we were being directed to. Pretty much the second that the door was opened by my partner, it was just a wall of black smoke. We're not geared up for any of that stuff. So my partner decided, you know, let's do one in, one out, which is basically use up whatever oxygen you have while you're in the smoke. And then when you feel like it's becoming overwhelming, you come out and your partner goes in. So my partner, you know, took the lead on that one. He went in with his flashlight, started directing people down the hallway to where I was. And as the people came out to the hallway, I was either directing them down the stairs or, as you saw in the video, probably the one mother that came out holding her infant. She looked like she was ready to collapse. So I took the baby from her and helped her down, took the baby down. Another one of our cops, Officer Alam, carried someone down three flights of stairs that had a broken leg. So just an overall, you know, great effort by all the officers at our precinct. And then, FD came and did their thing. So we're just thankful that everybody got out okay.
I mean, a living, breathing hero, Vincenzo. After all those sequence of heroic events transpire, and you can kind of compose yourself and realize the gravity of what just transpired and the lives that you saved, you and your partner, how did that hit you? When it all came around and you're like, wow, what a moment, what were you thinking then?
I mean, I got to say that moment hit, you know, both of us when we were, you know, told to stay out of the building and let fire do their thing. And we were standing down at the car with the kids that we brought down and just hearing, you know, the kids talk to the adults that came down afterwards or before them and kind of seeing people reunite. It was just a little surreal. And like I said, we were just really thankful that we were able to provide, you know, the service to them that we said we would when we swore in. So it was a little surreal when it happened. And now looking back on it, you know, it's gratifying.
And how much does that day crystallize the change in careers that you made and kind of what you potentially encounter day to day as part of serving our communities?
I mean, it really, there's no better feeling than wearing this, you know, shield and this patch. We do it every day, and most days go by where it's, I'm not going to say it's, you know, to a status quo or whatever it is. But other days come and go where it's stuff like this, and it's definitely different than the PGA lifestyle. But you know, there were ups and downs in the PGA lifestyle. There's ups and downs in this career, and again, I'm just happy we could do what we did, and I'm thankful that I can wear this uniform every day and do it.
Vincenzo, it's a marvel. I mean, you're saving lives, you're serving our community every day. And oh, by the way, you've taken this tool of golf and you've used it to bridge the community to the police force there. How have you been able to do that, and what motivated you to want to go ahead and do that? Because you're a busy guy.
So, yeah, I mean, golf is my passion, and I'm lucky that, again, that I have a career in law enforcement, and I get to move what was my career into a full-time passion, if you will. I always loved junior golf when I was teaching, and I never wanted to let go of the teachings, so I thought it would be a really cool idea to get golf going in the community that I serve, which is a very underserved community as far as sports go. It being in Brooklyn, you know, there's a lot of concrete, so there's not a whole lot of grass. They get the usual sports of, you know, handball, football, and basketball. So I thought that would be a really cool opportunity to use this uniform and, you know, really reach out to the kids and get them to see a different side of both, you know, myself and other officers that I work with, or just anyone in a blue uniform in general, through golf. You know, golf is just the greatest game that there is. And I think it's a very moral sport. And I think that everything just kind of really worked together in what I had a vision of. Myself and my partner are NCOs, which is a neighborhood coordination officer. So we do spend more time in the community than most officers. And again, it just all kind of blended together. And I really saw it as an opportunity to build that bridge between golf and an underserved community, build it between the cops and community. Cops and golf, just every connection that there was, it just made sense.
I mean, it seems like such a natural fit. It's a no-brainer. When you first join the force and your fellow officers see, okay, of course the golf guy is going to start a program like this with PGA Bridges, did they give you encouragement? How did it arise where it's gotten to where it is now?
So, yeah, from day one, it was a lot of, wait, what did you do before this? I was a golf pro. And like, wow, like, why the switch? And it's, you know, like I said, it's good that I can have a career and a passion and blend the two. It's growing this year from last year, which is obviously the goal is to grow it every year and get more kids introduced. For the first year running, we had 35 kids in the program. This year, it's going to hopefully move into a program to join the other sports within the NYPD that they offer to the children in the different communities. So I'm just really excited about that opportunity. And you know, just keep building connections between different golf companies. I got to also say I'm really thankful that the golf side of my life really embraced it. You know, companies like Golf Daddy, Almost Golf, Backyard Birdies, all these different companies, Chippo Golf, they all kind of jumped in as soon as they heard what I wanted to do. They started throwing product at it because they heard kids and golf and community, and they were all over it. So it's really cool to see different companies come together for, you know, the cause of golf and building the bridges.
I'm so fascinated by the career transition, Vincenzo. How do you, in going from golf pro to police officer in underserved community, how do you take the skills, the weaponry of being that golf pro, that high-level golfer, and apply it to this new career of yours where clearly you are indeed serving your community?
You know, there's not too many things that overlap. There are a couple, you know, where I was in a country club and I would have to, you know, memorize members and memorize faces and what they wanted and what brands they liked when they walked in the shop or their swing patterns and stuff like that. That's the closest, you know, comparison I could say is now when we look for, you know, the criminal behavior, I have to, you know, memorize faces, memorize buildings, you know, things of that nature is probably the only comparison that I can make that would, you know, put the two together in just a different country club I'm working in.
Vincenzo, as we're about to let you go, are you able to play any golf these days with everything you got on your plate?
Yeah, I'm trying to stay as active as I can within the Met section, which is, again, I'm going to be biased, but it's the best section out of all of them. The best players are in it. So I'm thankful that I get to still play in events as an assistant. I just looking to sign up actually later today. I was just talking to my partner about signing up for the assistant event, the match play. So trying to play on the Mondays where I can, even though it's a busy schedule already. I'm looking forward to helping out with PGA Hope and helping the veterans out. And then alongside everything else that we've got going on, I'm also running a golf tournament Memorial Day weekend that's going to be helping out veterans and the Widows and Children's Fund. So really just trying to blend golf into as much of the uniform as possible and do the right thing with golf, because golf's always done right by me.
You know, George, some would say my last 9 holes were criminal in nature themselves. So maybe that's the tie, Vincenzo, between his line of work and golf there.
And we get to talk to Officer Rollo, so many amazing people on the show, but this was special to get to spend some time
with
you. Yeah, true hero. And you got two fans now rooting you on in the Mets section. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much.
Motoring right along on Golf Today. Golf's top instructors with Jim McClain premieres today exclusively on Golf Pass. McClain, one of the greatest golf instructors of the modern era, pioneer of video-aided golf instruction. He has helped thousands of golfers from everyday players the likes of, say, Ben Crenshaw, Keegan Bradley, Chris Kerr, that play their best golf over the course of the last half century. Also has mentored dozens of other influential teachers. Part of his coaching tree includes Golf Pass own Devin Phonebreak. In this series, Jim joins Devin to share invaluable wisdom and game-saving tips from his years of teaching golfers in order to help you shoot your lowest scores ever. We have legendary golf instructor Jim McClain joining us now. And Jim, you were a pioneer in bringing instruction to the masses through video back in the day, whether that was through shows you did here on Golf Channel or productions that date all the way back to, I'm not going to age you, VHS tapes. How did it feel to get back in front of the cameras and bring new, updated instruction to people seeking help with their swings?
Well, it was great. I had a nice, great day with Devin Phonebreak and your crew here at the Biltmore. And we talked about, I think, some new things, the newest technology. But for sure, I had great days with the Golf Channel, and I treasure those days I had as we actually started the Golf Channel.
Jim, what could viewers learn from this series that they may have not already heard or seen from you before?
I think we talked a little bit more about ground reaction force, using the ground a little more. I wrote the X Factor a long time ago. I did a series on the Golf Channel about that. And, you know, there's new stuff. Obviously, there's the force plates that we have now, and all the biomechanics. So we talked about that.
Jim, when we see guys on the PGA Tour, and especially when you're walking down the range, you see all these different moves, some of them absolutely gorgeous, like an Adam Scott, but not all of them are necessarily swings that you could say, okay, let's have a 10 or 15 handicap try and replicate that action. Is there one pro that you think would be best for the average handicapper to think, maybe that's a swing that I want to try and take something from?
Well, that's an interesting question. Probably not Scottie Scheffler, although he's clearly the best player in the world at the moment, because it's just such a powerful swing. There's a lot going on with his leg action. I'd say probably Nelly Korda would be, a great swing for most people to emulate.
You know, as you look through it, you've been able to talk about the golf swing with some of the greats of our game, people like Sam Snead, Claude Harmon, Ken Venturi, Jackie Burke. Is there one specific thing you picked up from anyone that's been instrumental to your teaching over the years?
Well, all of those people have been fabulous, and they all gave me great ideas. I think Ken Venturi was really tremendous talking about the two-way action in the golf swing. He taught so many, top tour players about the arms and the club and the shoulders going back while the lower body starts the downswing, which we know a lot more about it now, but he was way ahead of the curve there. And I think Jackie Burke for his great work in putting and chipping. So, all of those guys were tremendous, though.
And, Jim, you competed in the Masters as an amateur back in 1972, made the cut, got to see the weekend. Over the years, you've coached, a little golf clap here, coached so many big names, Curtis Strange, Greg Norman on the women's side, Christy Kerr, Lexi Thompson, just to name some. Curious to get your thoughts on world number one Scottie Scheffler. What makes him so great?
Well, to me, Scottie looks like he's hitting a ball right out in the Atlantic Ocean with total freedom on every driver swing he makes. It's just like the most free action you could ever ask for. And it's just great to watch him let go, which is probably the two most important words when you're playing golf. And it's not easy to do, but just absolutely amazing what we see him doing in the last few years.
Well, Jim, we're definitely excited to see the video series that you have as part of golf's top instructors with Jim McClain premiering today exclusively on Golf Pass.
Thanks for having me on.